Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
Hi, I'm Dave Arnold. I'm the president of Arnold Partners, LLC, based here in Silicon Valley. And we're an executive search firm focused on finding CFOs for technology companies.
Dave, thanks so much for making time to join us on the Ivy Podcast. You want to spend a little bit of time talking about your current company, your role, things that you're doing. But before that, give us a thumbnail version of your career to date.
So I'm a product of Silicon Valley. My dad was an electronic engineer here in Silicon Valley before Silicon Valley was coined. I'm the youngest of nine. So I came along and I studied economics and accounting as an undergrad, got just enough accounting courses to be dangerous, and started my career in finance, which was short-lived, thankfully. And found my calling pretty early on in recruiting, and started out with large firms and progressively went to smaller and smaller firms. And now I guess I'm about as small as I can be, because it's me, myself, and I in Arnold Partners.
Oh, that's very exciting. Tell us a little bit about the path that you had chosen in terms of being very, very niche-y, as far as the focus area, you know, partner with companies to help them bring the CFOs.
Yeah.
What's the mission there? How did you actually get into that?
Yeah, I think it's something I learned early in sales, is you wanted to sell to the top. And that I think in the corporate world, that means you're selling to the CEO and or boards. And I think the big epiphany for me was just before the dot-com boom, I decided I wanted to be a CFO search guy. Even though I hadn't done any CFO searches, because I had this drive to sell to the top. And it is niche-y, but there were a couple of guys here in the Valley before me doing this exact thing. And I kind of modeled my business after them. They happened to both be very senior in age. And so I figured they would, depart the scene sooner than later. And in fact, that did happen. And I was able to establish myself really during the dot-com boom as being a boutique resource, if you will, for the CFO search business.
Understood. No, that's very interesting. And as far as, you know, you've been in this industry for quite some time, what are some of the trends and ideas that really excite you these days? What are you observing? What are you researching? What do you think is the next big thing?
Well, I think there's a bunch of things going on all at once, which makes it a little bit confusing. I'll try to crystallize that. I mean, first off, I think the role of the CFO has changed. We've had different flavors over the years, but I think today the CFO is largely recognized as the number two executive in most technology companies. And that means that CFOs need to be well-versed in a whole variety of topics. They can't just be an accountant. They can't just be an FP&A person. They've really got to be a business person to the entire organization. So I think that puts pressure on not only on the search business to find people that have this broad skill sets, but I think it also it puts an obligation on us to educate our clients on what the role of the CFO is as well, in order to attract, you know, the best candidates. I think that's coupled with a change in the pace of business. It seems like even the pandemic has exacerbated this, where I run into companies that are growing faster than ever before. And I think this pace of change is something that we all need to brace ourselves for, because it's gone are the days where, and you can think of product innovation over a 2 or 3 year period of time. It's like companies have to be iterating just faster and faster today. And I think that puts pressure on the role of the CFO as well.
No, and you couldn't have set me up any better for the next question that I want to okay. ask, because, you know, as a technology executive myself and being in the role of, you know, just building technology for, you know, whether that's Fortune 500 or startups, we always, you know, at the end of the day, attached at the hip with other executives, especially the CFOs, when we talk about proper budgeting, forecasting, you know, the CapEx versus OpEx, all of that stuff that's way, way, you know, beyond me. Share with us your thoughts on really the role of the CFO in the modern workforce, especially when it comes to, you know, an information technology organization.
Yeah, so the CFO has broad responsibility for predicting the business, planning the business, and predicting the business, being a business partner to the CEO and being a sounding board for sound decision-making, right? So in technology, we get a lot of founders that have wild ideas and it's great. And they generally wake up with a new idea or 10 ideas every day. And part of the role of the CFO is to filter those ideas and help the CEOs and the teams stay focused on the important tasks at hand. I mean, I think if there's one thing a CFO does, it's that. It's don't chase the shiny object. It really keep the organization focused on the goal. And so that sort of, that encompasses everything else too, right? Like helping marketing about where they're going to spend their dollars. How do you measure that ROI in marketing spend? Your sales force, how do you create a sales force? How do you incentivize a sales force with the right commission plans, with the right incentives? So they're involved in that. How do you look at R&D? Where are you spending money on R&D? Is it the right spend? Is it the right blend? You know, all of these things. So the CFO is really touching everything in the business, and they're helping the CEO communicate all of those activities to their investors, whether they're public or private. So the CFO is this conduit, if you will, of what's happening in the business and helping keep that business focused, and then communicating that story back out to either, again, public or private investors.
Well, that makes perfect sense. It's at the end of the day, being that strategic partner, having that seat at the table, and not just from the finance perspective, but really from the overall holistic view of the organization, you know, in general, how do some of the things that we're looking at tie to the overall strategy? I think that makes perfect sense and resonates on so many levels of what you're talking about. What are your thoughts on, so with the pandemic and with, you know, the hybrid work models and the overall future of work, we've seen a great emergence of, you know, the contingent workforce as a trend, just, you know, growing tremendously, you know, through the past couple of years. What are your thoughts on that in terms of companies leveraging contingent workforce? How does that impact the areas that you serve from the CFO perspective? What are some of your thoughts from your perspective there?
So I think the strategic use of contingent workers is imperative to any modern technology company. And again, it sort of gets back to that pace of change issue. And whether those contingent workers are software programmers, if they're outsourced, if they're, you know, many of my clients here in Silicon Valley and beyond use remote development teams, whether they be in Asia or in Central Europe. We're seeing a lot of that. So I think these tools of using contingent workforces have been around a while, but I think that they're more maybe easier to deploy now than they ever have been. So you can turn things on and off much quicker than you could. I just spoke with a client. It's a very, very small company. And yet they have the ability to be a 200 person company, you know, kind of overnight if need be. And so I think if you're going into, let's say, bid on a project with a, you know, a company of any size, and you're going in as a two person team, you know, you might be up against a pretty big wall there. But if you can say, hey, we actually have these 200 developers over here that, you know, take commands from us, makes a big difference. So I think there's a lot of moving parts on that. Early in my career, I actually was deploying contingent workers in finance and accounting. And I think those types of people, sort of general administrative contingent workforces, also play an important role in companies' ability to pivot to what's happening in their business. Particularly as I mentioned at the forefront of this, which is, you know, we're seeing some companies just grow so fast. It's almost unimaginable, and you cannot support that growth necessarily with all regular full-time W-2 employees for sure. You need to have a blend and a strategy around that. And I think the CFO plays a really important role in determining that strategy with the CEO. And then if in the case there is a head of HR to again, be a business partner to HR.
Very much so. Absolutely. What are some of the challenges that you're seeing or have encountered through the, you know, the current times when it comes to being able to find that right candidate for that, you know, that right type of culture that you're trying to make that match? Yeah. What are some of the things that you have, you know, observed lately in the current market conditions?
Well, the current market condition is very overheated in terms of there's much more demand for CFOs than there is supply. And there's a number of things affecting that. First and foremost, we have a demographic shift that's happened. The baby boomers are aging out. And a lot of those folks that were CFOs 3, 4, 5 years ago have retired and they moved on. And the generation that's following the baby boom generation, which is the classic kind of age, not to get into discriminatory age groups, but you know, people tend to reach CFO between the age of 40 to about 50 is when they sort of get their first CFO gig. And that generation is you know, half the size of the baby boomer generation. So we have sort of this demographic shift that's happened. And then on top of that, we have a tremendous number of technology companies that are doing really, really well that want to IPO or they want a SPAC or they want to do whatever they want to do. And they need a CFO to do that. And then I think a third thing that's complicating matters is that I think the pandemic has caused people to hunker down more than they're willing to make a change. They're sort of willing to accept what they have and go with it versus look at opportunities outside of their current employer. Now, I think it's going to be very interesting as we emerge out of this, if there may be a real reset for people. Like they're going to say, oh my God, you know, the pandemic's over. You know, what do I want to do next? And I actually think it could be an opportunity for individuals to kind of reinvent themselves. And I also think it's an opportunity for companies to look at their exec staff and think, well, you know, is it time to make a change with this part or that part?
Right. No, absolutely. That's a very interesting dynamic and curious how things will play out, especially with the next period that we all...
Yeah, I think the next, really next 6 months might be really an interesting and tumultuous time in a different way.
Right. Absolutely. I wish we had the crystal ball to look at that. When it comes to... You know, when you partner with an organization that's looking for that that executive skill set, especially so specialized when it comes to finance, obviously the cultural fit becomes of paramount importance, as well as, you know, all other credentials and experience that are required. How do you go about making sure that the candidates that you pre-qualify, you source, have the right, you know, I guess, personality attributes or whatever the case may be, to really be able to identify, you know, that particular match that, yes, this particular candidate has a potential of really fitting into that, especially with startups. It's, you know, very, very interesting dynamics there. Share your thoughts on that.
It is. It's difficult. First off, I think that's a little bit of the magic of what a good executive recruiter does. I think the ante for getting a candidate to the table is, do they have the skills? And I think that is, well, it's not simple. I think that there's a certain amount of check the box, been there, done that. They have these attributes. I think where it comes to cultural fit, it's much, much more difficult and much more subtle. And I what I would boil it down to is having similar expectations around outcomes. I think it's having similar work styles. It's making sure that the values of the CEO are aligned with the values of the CFO. So, for example, if the CEO has a value of we're going to grow at any cost, you know, I want top line growth. That's what's important to me as a CEO, and that's what my board has demanded of me, is we need to grow revenue and we don't care what our losses are. And there are companies out there that have done that. I mean, Amazon is a classic example, right? They grew at basically any cost to dominate the world, and they now do, and now they're very profitable. But for many, many years, you know, Amazon lost money. And so there was a culture there to grow. There are other cultures where the CEO may say, we want to grow at a steady pace, but we want to grow at a profitable pace. Well, this is a big cultural difference in a company. And it directly relates to a CFO, because it directly relates to how that CFO would manage the P&L and balance sheet for that CEO and for that organization. And maybe that's a little bit of a dry example of culture, but I think there are many things in culture for a tech company, a tech startup, that need to align between the CEO and the CFO for that match to be successful. I mean, I liken it to a marriage. And so if you think about a successful marriage, I think the key to a successful marriage is that you have similar interests and expectations of your partner. And when those expectations aren't met, that's when you have problems, right? So you think about the CEO-CFO relationship, you want to make sure that those expectations of one another are aligned and that they're met. And getting all that to work is, it's not all the recruiter's job. I think the recruiter's job is to explain the values of each person and let the adults be adults and see if that's the right match.
Right. Absolutely. I love that analogy of, you know, the marriage and how, you know, just the long-term outlook into things. I think, you know, it just probably changes the perspective of, you know, types of candidates and how, you know, their potential fit within the organization. I think there's just so many moving parts. That's why, you know, I can relate to what you're talking about, that being very complex and difficult and challenging process. When we talk about just careers in general, good portion of our listeners are early stage career professionals and those that are seeking, potentially considering a career in executive search. What are some of the things that you wish you knew where you're at right now, that you would tell to your younger self that this is the things you need to consider?
Yeah. Wow, that's a big question. There have been many learnings, certainly along my path. I think if I put it in terms of being a sole proprietor, I would answer one way, in that we all have certain attributes we're good at. For example, I believe I'm good at sales. I was trained early in my career at sales, which to me is mostly about listening and not talking. And I believe that is an important skill that I have in order to listen to a client's needs, listen to a CFO's needs, and make that match. So being an executive recruiter is really the ultimate sales job. You have to sell to get the client, which is very competitive. I'm competing against very, very large publicly traded firms, Korn Ferry, Spencer Stewart, you know, versus me. You know, why is a client going to hire me versus one of those guys? So you have to be realistic about the daunting competitive landscape in executive search. It is on the one hand, there are zero barriers to entry because all you need is a phone and a Zoom connection and a LinkedIn account, and you can be a recruiter. But the ability to obtain a client is very, very difficult, very challenging, and very competitive. So that's sale number one, right? Then you're so lucky you got a client, you're so happy, and you have to turn around and sell that opportunity to the marketplace. And in my world, you know, CFOs are pretty skeptical. So you have to arm yourself with enough information to get those CFOs to listen to you. And then you have to turn around and sell the CFO back to the client, right? So now you're selling number three. This is the third step of the process of selling. And then ultimately you have to make the match work. And that's a delicate dance frequently. So all of those things, you know, I hear some people want to get into executive search because they quote unquote like people, you know, they're people person. And that's not really the right reason to get into executive search. I'm not saying I don't like people. I love people, but you have to be a salesperson to succeed in executive search. If you think because you like people, you're going to do well in search, I think that's not the right path for you. I think the other thing is if you're going to be self-employed, no matter probably whatever you do, whether it's in executive search or any other line of business, is it's really important to be honest with yourself and take an inventory of your skills and shore up those areas where you're weak. So my area of blatant weakness is or was marketing. I had no marketing muscle. And if you think of marketing for a sole proprietor, it's kind of tough, right? You don't have a big budget. You can't just, you know, buy banner ads or whatever. And so you have to think very nimbly about marketing and how you market. And, you know, when I started my own firm, I that was the very first thing I did, is I got with a marketing team and they helped me build a brand and they helped me build a logo and they helped me build a website. And they've helped me all along, kind of, you know, I blog, but they helped me with that. I have an editor, you know, I don't try to do everything myself. And I think wherever you're weak as a sole proprietor, you need to balance that out with other skills. And I mentioned at the top of this, I studied accounting and finance in school, but I'm a horrible accountant. Right. So, fortunately, my wife is a very good accountant and she takes care of our books. And that's not a small issue when you're self-employed. You know, we have to pay quarterly taxes and we have to, you know, do those correctly. And I could not do that without her. So that's another area where I'm weak and I recognize that. And so I did something about it. And so I think those two things combined. I mean, if you're thinking about being an executive search, you got to realize it's the ultimate sales job. And I think if you're thinking about being self-employed, take that inventory of skills and be realistic about where you're strong and where you're weak and shore up those areas where you're weak.
Right. No, right. Absolutely. I love that. And especially, you know, give you kudos to be able to compartmentalize and, you know, summarize such a loaded question into these kind of these recommendations, because it's probably worth the entire episode to talk about something like this. So I definitely appreciate that effort. Okay. And Dave, in conclusion, I'd like to spend a little bit of time talking about your ways, your sources for self-actualization and learning. Share with us, what do you consume on a daily basis? What's your content diet is looking like?
I look at a number of things every day. In my vertical, there's an online publication called CFO Dive. It's pretty cool. It goes into very minutia issues that CFOs face on a daily basis. And it covers a wide variety of topics, both technical and cultural. And it's a very interesting read. It's a quick read. It comes out daily. It's something I look at. I also subscribe to a publication called Director Moves, which tracks boards of directors and who's moving on and off of boards. We've seen a tremendous, thankfully, improvement of the number of females on publicly traded boards. And it's just a trend line that I find very, very interesting. And I hope I'm not preceding your next question, but you asked me about a book that had an influence on me. And there is one book that if particularly for a self-employed person, again, although it could certainly apply to anybody kind of in a consultative world. There's a book called Million Dollar Consulting by Alan Weiss, and it's succinct. As a business book, it's right to the point, and he doesn't mince words, and he says, this is what you got to do to be successful. And the idea is, you know, that you're going to bill $1 million, and I don't care about that. And I don't think it's about the money. I think it's a mindset of, you know, how do you bring yourself into work every day? Particularly as a self-employed person, you know, you don't wear your pajamas to work. You put your game face on every day, and you treat it like a real job. And if you do that, he has a lot of really good advice in that book. I think the other thing, we didn't touch on this artificial intelligence thing. I don't know if you want to go back to that or not.
Yeah, absolutely. No, definitely want to spend some time talking about this, because it's a trend that's been growing, gaining a lot of ground lately. So I
have some pretty, so I've been using a new tool. I can't name the company because they're in beta, but I've been using a new tool that uses artificial intelligence and machine learning, all the buzzwords, but it really does, to help me source candidates. So I use a variety of methods to source candidates, certainly my own network, my own proprietary database, LinkedIn, independent consultants, all sorts of things. And now this new tool it's based on LinkedIn, but it's not completely contingent on LinkedIn. And it uses an algorithm that continues. It runs 24/7. You know, I can check my little report every morning. There'll be new people in there that weren't there yesterday. And it's fascinating to me. And it's great. But here's the thing, is there's been a lot of talk about artificial intelligence in recruiting. And will these technologies replace people like me? And I may be an old fuddy-duddy, stodgy guy. Perhaps I'm missing the mark on this, but I resoundingly say the answer to that is no. Because the magic of what an executive recruiter does is transforms someone's profile into someone whose piqued curiosity becomes a candidate, and whose candidacy then becomes an interesting hire for a client. And all that is very soft skill oriented. It has the art of persuasion, the art of listening, the art of influence. All of these things are not something that an algorithm is going to replace. So on the one hand, as a sole proprietor, I'm really excited about embracing this artificial intelligence technology platform. And it doesn't keep me up at night that it's going to replace me anytime soon.
No, absolutely. And especially, you know, we discuss that topic a lot, and especially, you know, in different industries in terms of automation, you know, advanced technologies such as AI and machine learning, how does that going to impact certain professions? How does that impact certain industries in general? So it's an interesting dynamic how, you know, certain areas can be completely replaced by, you know, by the technology and automation, but always that human element is, like you've mentioned, is rather impossible to replicate, at least in, you know, in the next shorter period. We don't know where the algorithms are going to be in the next 10, 20 years. But yeah,
I suppose that's true. I mean, you know, and nothing sits still. And I'm amazed at how much has changed. And on the other hand, you know, if I think back to my earliest days of recruiting, you know, really in the early 90s, some of the basic things just haven't changed at all. And that's that human connection, the ability to get somebody excited about a new opportunity, and the ability to get a client excited about a candidate. And those things, I don't think a computer is going to do that.
Well, what we can do is we can do another episode in that near future and see how much have transpired. I actually, all jokes aside, I love doing that with all of my guests.
It'd be interesting. I mean, I don't know what the timeline is on that, but I think, you know, things do change quickly on the one hand.
Yeah. Just in general, not from advanced tech perspective, but just revisiting, you know, in a year to see
because
you and I have talked about
changes too, right? So I talked about getting into the search business right before the .com boom, right? And I can tell you that it was a great time to jump out and get self-employed because everybody needed to hire. I mean, we were going through crazy times. And then in 2001, 2002, you know, the San Francisco Bay Area lost 350,000 jobs.
Yeah.
In the period of 18 months. Well, there wasn't a lot of demand for recruiting services, as you can imagine. So, you know, don't get too heady, I would say, for anybody going in the recruitment business right now, too. I mean, times are good right now. We're in a boom time. I think we're going to be in a boom time for the, you know, next 12 to 18 months. I don't see it slowing down. In fact, I think we're in for unprecedented growth here in the United States. And that's only going to increase demand.
No, for sure. Yeah, that's for sure.
I was talking to another recruiter friend of mine, and I think, you know, she said to me, she said, be careful which searches you take, be careful which clients you take, because if you don't have a great asset to sell when the market's good, from a client perspective, it's very hard to sell it. So, I mean, 18 months from now, you know, a lot of recruiters could be crying in their soup that they don't have any clients. So we could check back in then.
No, we absolutely will. I do love doing that with a lot of the guests and just revisiting the conversation that we had a year ago and see what are some of the trends and ideas that we've covered, what has changed, what really had transpired. So that's very exciting. And Dave, I can't thank you enough for your time today. I actually personally learned quite a bit through this conversation because it's such a new space for me. So we'll stay in touch.
Okay.
And we'll,
if there's anything else, any follow-ups, you know, just let me know. I'd be happy to chime in, whether it's on self-employment or on the recruitment business specifically.
Absolutely. I think that would be very relevant.
All right. Awesome.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.